Hello and welcome to Sri Lanka 99.94 Cricket Every Day. My name is Mark Machado and I'm from the Murali end, and I'm joined as always by Estelle Vazadevan from the Papere. Sri Lanka 99.94 is your new home for Sri Lanka content. We'll be dropping into your podcast feed on YouTube and the 99.94 app several times each week. So please do rate, review and subscribe, and thanks for joining Cricket's conversation. Estelle, today we are talking about domestic Sri Lankan cricket. We're talking about the Major League Tournament. It's Sri Lanka's long-form domestic tournament, and it was recently won by the Colombo Cricket Club. Lots to talk about in this, including the players the outstanding players in the tournament, and what the future of this tournament might be. And also, I suppose, to a degree, what's the point of even playing it, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's I don't know what to say about that. I know your opinion on Test cricket for Sri Lanka, but 25 tests in the next 5 years. So I don't know, you know, what these guys, in the end, what their performances mean, big picture, international cricket.
There was lots of great performances in it, though, right? So, actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to outline what my opinion is about Test cricket. And also, I suppose I should state that this is my opinion, not the opinion of the Kimberverse, not the opinion of 99.94, and not the opinion of Stale or anyone else in the Sri Lankan cricket. Because I think what I'm going to say, you need to know the prism that I looked through. For it to maybe make sense. Basically, I just don't think, if the rest of the world is struggling to come and play Test cricket with Sri Lanka, well, let's be honest, there is a huge appetite to play Test cricket. But if the rest of the world don't want to do it, if we're going to end up with 5 tests a year, which I actually already think might be slightly out of date already, because I think they might end up playing more tests next year, then just what's the point of doing it? That said, though, I mean, 3-day, 4-day, 5-day cricket is a beautiful art form. And I suppose in some degree, we need to keep playing it. You know, some of the oldest matches in the world, oldest cricket rivalries in the world are built around long-form cricket, right? Even all the school big matches, it's about the longer form of the game, which almost always inevitably ended in a draw. But that's the thing we're most looking forward to, right? Let's look at the final briefly between Colombo Cricket Club and Tamil Union. That ended in it was awarded to Colombo Cricket Club, but effectively that ended in a draw as well, right? They weren't able to get a result.
Yeah, I think, how much did the two teams get? I think across the board it was about 1,200 runs.
Yeah.
So not the ideal final. Very, very, very batting friendly conditions. I think we saw about 4 to 5 centuries in that game alone. So, yeah, not the kind of final you'd want. Not a type of, game that would encourage, you know, people to watch or whatever. So, yeah, that was a disappointing end. But CCC, of course, one of the top teams in the competition, despite not having some of the players who are currently on national duty, were able to take home the title. My opinion on Test cricket is, I just wish they played more, you know. It's really sad for players like Karuna Ratna and players who are really good at that format. And I think Sri Lanka also seems to kind of do better in the longer format, at least at home. So that's a bit disappointing because, you've got... But then again, when you look at stuff where, you know, England is playing 45 tests, where your Sri Lanka is playing 25, and then your players are judged on the same level. Oh, Joe Root's made 2,000 runs in this cycle. Well, yeah, he's played double the amount of test matches, right? And that's not to say he hasn't played well, but they're not on the same level, right? He's someone like Dimuth Karunaratne, at least in the previous years. So it's really disappointing, but I think it's almost an inevitability at the moment that particularly in the smaller nations, when there isn't much of a commercial advantage, a financial advantage to playing Test cricket. Whether we will see it last for much longer than the next 10 to 15 years.
And then I suppose if we're talking about the Major League Tournament, we need to talk about first-class cricket in Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka, I think, is the only test-playing nation which has a system where it's more akin to kind of English football or rugby, where it's a pyramid-esque system, I suppose, where anyone, in theory, can start a club and aspire for first-class status. It isn't cut up into counties or states or like it might be in other places. And that's why we've got a first-class tournament, which has 26 teams in it, which is huge compared to almost anywhere else. I mean, in England, they're talking about the 16 counties and they're trying to get them cut down to around 10. The Sheffield Shield has, what, like 8 teams in it, I think. Obviously, India is exponentially bigger than Sri Lanka, so, you know, the Ranji Trophy has been expanding over the years as they get more people involved in it. So maybe it's not really fair to compare it to India. But is it viable to have 26 first-class teams in Sri Lanka?
I think, look, it's not ideal, obviously. And I think a lot of people have spoken about it and a lot of people know what the issues are about it. But there is a plan to water it down and kind of get, not water it down, sorry, to kind of trim it down to fewer and fewer teams over the next 3 years, which was, I believe, a plan brought in by Tom Moody when he was director of cricket. But 3 years is a long time in Sri Lanka cricket. And I mean, plans change very quickly. So we'll have to wait and see. If that happens, I think that'll be great for Sri Lanka cricket. But again, you've got to wonder, like, what's the point at the end of the day? Because, I mean, what is the incentive these players have at the end of the day if they're not aspiring to be, or no, if they don't fit into the shorter formats? Is it a viable career anymore? I don't know. Yeah, Test cricket, is it?
Well, yeah, this is my issue with it. It's not that there isn't, you know, love on the island to play it. It's not that there isn't people who can play it. I'm pretty sure if you look at Sri Lanka's test team, I think it's good. No one's coming to Sri Lanka and going to get an easy ride. I don't think we're travelling particularly well at the moment. I think the reason for that is because our test side just don't play enough tests away from home. They're not used to playing in different conditions. They're basically part-time players. The system, they're part-time test players, sorry, they're full-time cricketers, but the system is not allowing us to develop this side. And I'm like, we might as well just put our resources into something else. I get that my opinion's quite draconian, though.
But you're right? If you think about it, okay, Sri Lanka go to Australia and most tests end in like 3 days. But the truth is, they play there about every 3-4 years and they get only 2 tests. And maybe they get a warm-up against one of the state sides or whatever. But whereas other teams, and I understand why that is, you get a team like India, you're playing 5 tests or 4 tests, right?
So my argument is, and sorry, I shouldn't be talking over to you there, but this topic makes me really angry, right? But basically what I've seen over the course of my life, right, is in the 90s, Sri Lanka had to fight to go get test series against people. They eventually used to come to all the big test playing countries that started to get 3, 4, 5 test series. And then what you've seen over the last decade and a bit is that's decreased. And at first it started to happen to the West Indies and Sri Lanka. And then it started to happen to Pakistan, Bangladesh and
New Zealand.
South Africa and New Zealand. And now we're in a situation where it's only really the big three get a decent bite of the cherry and everyone else is basically shafted. And really, it's the people at the top of the pyramid, it's the big three who've killed Test cricket or are in the process of strangling Test cricket to the ground. Would it, like Sri Lanka play the West Indies should be a really excited series for both teams. It never is because the teams are they come together so infrequently, right? It's not a it's for neither side is it. It's not really a viable thing. Both are doing it kind of as a vanity project that at this stage. And that is entirely the fault of the... I do not blame Sri Lanka cricket for this. I do not blame anyone else apart from the people who put those future tour programmes together who don't realise that actually you can build up this... You can build this rivalry up. You can get people excited about the idea that Sri Lanka coming over to England for five matches. There's a huge Sri Lankan population, as you know, Estelle, in Australia. They could sustain playing a full match series in Australia, right? But the system is pushing back at them all the time. Sorry. I'll let you have a go.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's all very kind of, I don't know what to say. It seems like there's no point kind of even pushing towards a situation where you are getting more tests, because it doesn't seem likely to happen, because obviously everyone's focused on the financial aspect and hosting tests are expensive, and you don't really make that money back. At least countries like Sri Lanka don't really make that money back. So then is it worth it investing that kind of money? You know, that conversation comes up. It's just sad, because obviously I think a majority of players who you would speak to in the Sri Lankan setup would say that they want to play test cricket. They want, because that's kind of drilled in your head, right? That's the pinnacle of the game. That's the toughest format to play in, to kind of establish yourself in. So the want to play is not lacking. But unfortunately, it just seems like, you know, we're just too small to kind of compete for a fair share when it comes to the ICC. So, yeah.
And I should just clarify, when you say too small, what you actually mean is the market, in terms of there's just not enough people, because people would have heard my earlier slight rant and gone, why did I put Bangladesh above Sri Lanka there? And it is just about TV rights, right? And how much they can sell these tours in for.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Sri Lanka's, I think, only the West Indies and...
If you look at Sri Lanka among the South Asian teams, there's probably, I mean, in test games, it looks like there are a lot of people, particularly because they play in Goa. But if you look at first class cricket, you don't get that much of interest, to be honest. You'd have people, you know, checking scores or whatever, or checking the stats. But there is not much interest. So it's a product, right? And if you can't sell it, then that becomes a problem when it comes to test cricket as well.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's refocus on the tournament
we're
talking about.
On what we were supposed to talk about.
Yeah, and let's look at the top run getters and the top wicket takers as well and chat through that.
Hi, I'm Nikesh Raghani, commentator and host of the India on 99.94 podcast. Several times each week, my co-host Sara Waris and I will be bringing you the very best in Indian cricket chat, whether we're discussing the legend of Julan Goswami, KL Rahul's strike rate, the men's T20 death bowling woes, or the latest controversy involving the BCCI. We've got you covered. You can listen and subscribe via your usual podcast provider. Just search for India on 99.94. You can watch us via YouTube, and you can download the 99.94 app. If you love Indian cricket, then join our conversation.
So Estelle, let's talk about the Major League tournament. Let's talk about the standout players. Nishan Madushkar was the top run scorer. He's been involved in the development side, the Sri Lanka development side. I saw him bat in England when he came over here last summer. He's somebody that obviously is highly rated by SLC, otherwise they wouldn't take him on all these tours. What I've seen of him, he plays lovely cricket. The question for me unfairly, you're going to have to be the one who's going to try and answer this, is if Sri Lanka have 25 tests left, where does he go with it? does he now try and, like, I don't know, change his game slightly so that he puts himself in contention for the white ball team? Or does he maybe try, I don't know, get a contract in Australia or the UK and build his careers there? Or should we not even worry about that as podcasters, as journalists, and just enjoy him while he's just playing cricket in Sri Lanka?
Yeah, I think that last option is what we should go for, because you never know. And you can't, I mean, I'm not saying that I know anything about Nishan Madushkar's plans for the future or whatever, but you can't blame a player if he does choose to move, right? Because like we discussed, if you are going to play test cricket, then your opportunities are so few that you have to ask yourself whether it's worth investing your time and energy and etc. Just on his series, on his tournament, 500 650s in 15 innings?
Yeah.
Pretty incredible, I think. Yeah. I think there was a triple 100 as well included in that. So he just... I don't know what was... I mean, what was going on, but he seemed to have really found a purple patch. Wicketkeeper batsman as well. So, I mean, you know, Sri Lanka have got plenty of those lining up. So it's not going to be... If he does pursue test cricket, it's not going to be easy to break into the side either. So, but yeah, just an incredible run from him throughout this season. Has been pretty much in every game he's made runs. And also what I've heard is that he does bat in the top order, but is kind of a flexible bat who can move to the middle order as well.
He did get runs in England as well. I think he's got the record for the highest innings ever by a Sri Lankan in Canterbury, which is... sounds like, oh, that's a pretty niche record, except you've got to remember Aravinda De Silva played there. I think he played two seasons in the mid-90s, and he's just about the greatest Sri Lankan player to ever play for Kent, or he is the greatest Sri Lankan player to ever play for Kent. So actually, that's quite an achievement when you think about it. And, you know, when you hear about that, you wonder. And the other thing I will add as well is I do think that possibly there might be some spaces in the test side that need filling. He's very young. He's still in his early 20s, yeah. I think. So yeah. he could be an option there for Sri Lanka for their next 25 tests that they've got over the next 5 years. So, yeah, hopefully, you know, all the power to him. And hopefully he goes on to fulfil his ambitions and whatever they may be, and is able to express himself in the cricket field for as long as possible. A couple of other names stood out to me. That was Kamindu Mendis made runs. He is becoming, I think, a slight issue, right? Because he's doing a lot of good stuff domestically. Whenever there's a domestic tournament, he's standing up almost in every format, but it's not really translating, at least at this moment in time, to opportunity, and when he's had the opportunity, he's not been able to translate it to success in the international jersey, right?
Yeah. See, the funny thing is, so they did try him in limited overs cricket. That's where he kind of made his debut. And of course, everybody's first thought when you say Kamindu Mendis is this ambidextrous bowler, right?
Yeah.
But he is a very, very good bat, and I think he's technically a batting all-rounder. And just like you said, the form he's had in domestic cricket and Sri Lanka A emerging hasn't really translated to international cricket until that first and only test he's played so far against Australia. I covered that test in Gaul, and he just looked like so at home. It was almost like even is similar kind of situation to Pathum Nisanka, who just looks like he was born to play long form cricket, right? Kamindu Mendis looked so good in that game. I think he got a half century. He looked like he had all the time in the world to play the ball. And I will add, Gaul International Cricket Stadium is like home for him, because he's played his cricket at Richmond College, right? He just looked so good in that game that you kind of forgot all the like the bad stuff he's done in limited overs cricket. He hasn't done anything in limited overs cricket so far. He hasn't really lived up to that potential. But in that one game, he looked really, really good. He looked like he was ready for international cricket. So I'd be very, very keen to see him in the playing 11 when Sri Lanka do play another test. I think it's March against New Zealand.
Yeah.
So tough conditions, no test cricket for about a year. Then you go to New Zealand and play in those kind of conditions. So it's not going to be easy. I don't know whether he will even fit in, because obviously that test side has a few different names from the limited over side to be added. But another one was also Sadhira Samarawickrama,
yeah,
who made a century in the final. Guy who's been like spoken about for years before he made his debut, had a decent kind of start to his international career, but you know hasn't really found a place in the 11. Another interesting name. But what I'm happy to see is all five of them are quite young. So the top five, I mean, on the batting chart. So Pasindo Suryabandara, Nuwanindu Fernando are the other two. All five are young. So maybe even though we have only 25 tests in the next 5 years, maybe the next cycle we get about 40. Wishful thinking.
Hopefully. And that's when all this batch should be in their peak, yep. Right? Should we take a quick break? When we come back, we'll talk about the wicket takers.
I'm Jared Kimber, and I host two podcasts on 99.94. Red Inca, which is chats on trends and stories within the game, with a weekly Q&A where I can be asked about anything from a time-travelling Don Bradman to which cricket ground serves the best food. And Double Century, a look at the historical stories that make cricket what it is today. You can search for either of them in your favourite podcast platform or on the 99.94 DM app.
So the top wicket taker for the tournament was Prabhath Jayasurya. He has had the most emphatic debut. It's a shame that he only made his debut when he's, 30? He got 67 wickets in 19 innings, which is ridiculous. I don't know what there is to say about him other than he's obviously a prolific talent. And it's a shame he hasn't played more tests. I suspect, at least for the next couple of seasons, he is the main spinner at home until the selectors change and maybe depending on what school you went to, someone else comes into favour at least. But yeah, he's emphatic and he takes wickets. What more can we say about Prabhath Jayasurya, Estelle?
Yeah, everything you said, but also add the fact that the top 10 wicket takers in the entire tournament are all left-arm spinners. So he's got plenty of competition coming into the next test series that Sri Lanka have, because it seems like everybody's bowling left-arm spin. Do you have any, what's your opinion on why that happens? That's incredible, right? The top 10 wicket takers are left-arm spinners.
So my opinion would be is that the reason that happens is because until you get to professional cricket, it's pretty rare that you come up against a left-arm spinner, right? But that is totally from an English perspective. And outside of England, that just doesn't happen. So I don't think that's...
Yeah, see, I assume all of these guys have come through schools cricket, right?
Yeah. And in England, especially when I was playing cricket, as in school and as an early adult, spinning, it was pretty rare that you'd come up against a spinner. So I'm looking at it through an English perspective. I think in Sri Lanka, I think if you're left-handed, I think they just make you spin the ball. I think that's it. That's what happens.
I think so too. I mean, the only kind of different type of bowler is Tarindu Ratnayake. If you guys remember the ambidextrous bowler, he's he's a bowling bowler. He's a ambidextrous bowler. Kamini Mendis is a batting all-rounder who can bowl with both arms.
I was going to say this earlier. I don't think being ambidextrous in cricket is as much of an advantage as we like to make out.
No,
it is,
I don't
because
think so
the umpire
either,
really tells you.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. It's not like he's running up to the crease and he's like, right, what hands it coming out?
I think it's useful for limited overs cricket where there's a lot of focus on matchups and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think even there, it's more advantage if you're advantages if you're someone like Liam Livingston who bowls with his right arm but can bowl leg spin, off spin, whatever, right? But yeah, I don't see it as a massive advantage either. I guess it could matter if you've got a rough outside, whatever, left-handers off stump or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you've got someone like him who can switch things up. But otherwise, I don't know if it's a massive advantage, but it gives the captain a bit an additional option, right?
Yeah. It's not like, though, in limited overs, they give you an extra few overs to bowl if you can bowl with both hands, which is maybe an innovation that they should think about at some point down the line. An ambidextrous spinner in T20 should be allowed to bowl six overs, but at least two of them should come out the other hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right, Estelle, I think we've pretty much said everything that needs to be said about the Major League Tournament.
No, I have one more thing to say.
Oh, go on. One more thing.
Did you go through the list of top wicket takers?
Well,
there are no fast bowlers in the top 20.
Oh, no, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, so not a single fast bowler in the top 20 wicket takers list over a season of first class cricket. Yeah, so competing in countries like New Zealand is going to be
hold on,
the entire fast bowling squad is.
Every fast bowler in Sri Lanka was out in Australia or on their way to Australia or in the physio room or in hospital or in rehabilitation. So that might be the reason why, right?
Yeah, I mean, this has been an issue, obviously, for many, 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 many years. And it's one of the reasons why Sri Lanka can't compete overseas, right? Because you don't have bowlers who are, as far as I know, what happens is the fast bowler takes the new ball, bowls maybe two overs, and then he's taken off. I mean, there's no surprise that they break down during tests, right? If they're not getting that much bowling in first-class cricket. So it's another issue, I guess. Again, I will say, is it worth, you know, troubling yourself with when you haven't got really that many games to play in the future? But yeah, it's another issue Sri Lanka really need to address if they want to be successful overseas in somewhere like New Zealand. Obviously, you're not going to play three spinners, right? And you're not going to have Lasith Ambuldeniya or Prabhat Jayasurya bowling on one end and have Lahiru Kumar on the other end. You're going to have to play the quicks. And if you're depending on the fast bowling all-rounders to do the job in countries like that,
it's not going to work.
Yeah, it's not going to work.
Let's leave it there. As and when more Sri Lankan domestic cricket matters arise, we will address them.
Thank you for listening to Sri Lanka 99.94, where we speak cricket every day. Please rate, review and subscribe wherever you enjoy your podcast and tell all your friends and family about us. You can download the 99.94 app and follow us on Twitter. I'm at Mark Machado and Estelle is at Estelle_Vazudev1, as in the number one. Never miss out. Join our 24/7 conversation on social media and follow us at 9994DM. Cricket every day, your way.
Get ready, race fans, because the ultimate NASCAR experience is about to hit the airwaves. Welcome to Pit Pass NASCAR, the podcast that takes you deep into the heart-pounding world of NASCAR racing.
Join us each week as we bring you closer to the NASCAR action with exclusive interviews and all the news and rumors you need with your favorite drivers, team members, and industry insiders.
So whether you're a fan of super speedways, short ovals, or road racing, or you've just watched Talladega Nights, Pit Pass NASCAR is the podcast you've been waiting for.
Get ready to fuel your passion for NASCAR like never before. Subscribe now to Pit Pass NASCAR on your favorite podcast platform or head to evergreenpodcast.com and get ready to join us.
Launching in the fall on Evergreen Podcast Network. Follow us on social media at pitpass_NASCAR to stay up to date with everything you need to know about the podcast.